Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is February the 24th, 2017, and in New York City, it felt as though this could be spring. Not likely in the middle of winter, but a respite from the blizzards, the snow. And the wonderful thing is you don't have to shovel sunshine, but you do certainly have to shovel snow. So that's a good thing that we are experiencing today. Those of you familiar with my program know that I'm a retired former senior special agent of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since 9/11, I have truly been a man on a mission trying to wake up our fellow Americans, trying to wake up our recalcitrant politicians, and I'm being generous in referring to them that way, that our immigration laws, that our borders are not about xenophobia, not about racism, not about bigotry, but about protecting the lives and livelihoods of Americans and protecting America's national security. It's just that simple. I've testified before many congressional hearings in the House and Senate, and way back when, right after 9/11, I was called for two of those hearings by Sheila Jackson Lee, a liberal Democrat. So whatever happened between then and now is mind-boggling. Lots of it has to do with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, with organizations that espouse the nonsense that this is about being pro-immigrant, by taking down borders, by creating lawlessness and anarchy within the immigration system. And what we have done in the process as a country is flooded America with cheap labor, displaced American workers. We've driven down wages for Americans, and not just at the bottom rung, but the high-tech industries with H-1B visas, EB-5 investor visas. We came up with every way imaginable to hammer the American labor force into the ground, and on top of it, permit the entry of criminal aliens from around the world, and permit the entry of terrorists into the United States. And consequently, thousands of Americans have paid with their lives, especially when you look at criminal aliens, when you look at the drug trade. This has been a suicidal policy, and incredibly, all too many of our fellow Americans still don't get it. And I suspect that they are among those that are out there chanting all kinds of negative stuff about the President of the United States. So I'm here to try to set the record straight. And I'm not being partisan. Those of you, again, familiar with me know that I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent. I believe both political parties are corrupt beyond words. If there was real justice, probably many party officials could be charged with racketeering offenses. This is a crazy situation that we live in. And so that's why I'm here, and I hope that you're joining me because of shared concerns that we all have. And again, not about xenophobia, certainly not about denigrating or insulting lawful immigrants who are playing by the rules, looking for a better way, looking to rekindle their lives in our great nation. So, and by the way, most of the illegal aliens who run our borders aren't the enemy either. Most of the people who run our borders have been caught between the proverbial rock and hard place because of the corruption of the U.S. government and the corruption of their own governments, pushed corporations, the banks, people that could care less about human lives, human dignity. They don't care. They are in a feeding frenzy, and I've come to compare them to a malignant tumor that is in an insatiable feeding frenzy. Tumors want to be bathed in nutrients, and they secrete hormones so that the body envelops these malignancies with a network of blood vessels so they can bathe in the nutrients. And these super greedy SOBs that have demanded that we take down our borders and flood America with cheap foreign labor, similarly are bathing in wealth. But you know, cancer doesn't survive once it kills its host. The bums that have done this don't seem to understand that if you destroy America, their future isn't particularly bright either. But that is how single-mindedly greedy they are. I could sooner accept the guy that steals a quart of milk and a loaf of bread because he's hungry, and if I was a cop on the beat, I would feel compelled not perhaps to arrest him, but maybe fill up a basket with some groceries and pay for it out of my own pocket. We have some truly desperate Americans in the United States. There are truly desperate people living all over the world, but we can't solve world poverty by bringing the world's poor to America. There are more than 7 billion people living on planet Earth. Probably half or more live below the poverty line. Could America absorb a couple of billion people? You know, I've come to compare that situation to being on a lifeboat after an ocean liner goes down. Imagine you're in a lifeboat, and the lifeboat is packed, and it's got your friends and your family in the water thrashing about. The water is frigid. The sharks are gathering. You want to help the people in the water. But if you let them all into the boat capsizes and everybody dies. Sometimes the solutions that we'd like to have don't exist. The smarter thing for America to do is to make certain that it takes care of its own people, irrespective of race, religion, ethnicity. This isn't about race, religion, or ethnicity, so that America can truly be the moral leader as well as the military superpower that it has been to create stability in the world, and then make certain that governments that have the wherewithal to care for their own people care for their own people. Mexico screams and yells and rants and raves that Donald Trump wants to put up a border wall. The reason we need that border wall is because that Mexican border is the only place on this planet where the first world and the third world collide along a more than 2,000-mile border. And because of the extreme difference in standards of living, education, expectations, the whole bit, there's an awful lot of pressure on that border, further exacerbated by corruption because of the drug trade and the drug cartels. There are many parts of Mexico that basically are failed states. And so Mexico has come to look at its own citizens, and it's estimated that perhaps more than 10% of all Mexicans live in the United States. And when they send money home, it becomes the second largest source of revenue for the Mexican economy. This is twisted. This is twisted. And when George W. Bush stood shoulder to shoulder with Vicente Fox, a slime bucket who said that the illegal aliens did the work that even American blacks would not do, I will never forget that statement of true racism and true bigotry. Think about that. And Bush stood next to Vicente Fox and referred to the Minutemen who were trying to secure the border, not by acting, but simply by reporting on their observations to the Border Patrol. Bush called them vigilantes, as did Vicente Fox. Unforgivable. We have had globalists occupying the Oval Office for decades. And I might upset some of my conservative friends, and I don't use that term the way the members of Congress do, you know, my good friends from across the aisle, and they're glaring daggers at each other. With friends like that, you don't need enemies. Many of my friends are conservatives. I respect their viewpoints. Doesn't mean I have to agree with them, but that's what America is about. America is a debate ongoing. Debate is the way that you celebrate the First Amendment. Had I not become a federal agent, my degree was in communications, arts, and sciences. I had planned to teach debate and public speaking on the college level. And on college campuses across America today, rather than debate, we have safe spaces. Safe spaces to shut down debate, shut down discussion, so that some thugs, like we saw at Berkeley, tell the rest of the population what they believe constitutes hate speech, and that everybody better march lockstep with their view of hate speech, or there will be violence. In my life, I never thought I would see that happen in these United States of America. If those rioters at Berkeley really have a problem with what was being discussed on campus, either picket, or, but this would take real brass, real ability, which apparently is lacking on their part, debate the guy you disagree with, demolish his arguments. You believe that the guy is wrong, show the world that he's wrong by having a debate. But of course, they're thugs. It's a thugocracy that they want to create, not a democracy that they revile, because they know that the facts, the law, common sense, and morality are all opposed to their twisted position. Otherwise, they would debate. And if they thought they were so right, then they should have been looking forward to that debate. Our side is so strong, we'll go in there and demolish your arguments. No. They're cowards. Safety in numbers. They cover their faces so that they're not recognizable by the police, so they can get away with committing felonies and injure people and destroy property on a horrendous scale. If they really had balls in their shorts, they would debate. They would confront the person they disagree with, and in a civilized manner, which is beyond their capability, apparently, you have it out in a debate. But they know they can't win the debate. Why? Because the facts, common sense, nothing supports their position. And perhaps they're not quite as smart as they want everyone to think they are. Because if they had to debate, their level of intellect would be put on parade, to use a term that doesn't go far enough. Anyway, back to the point at hand today. I want to start out by again reminding all of you to please go visit some websites that I'm very proud to contribute to, capsweb.org, frontpagemagazine.com. I do an awful lot of writing for the David Horowitz Freedom Center's frontpagemag.com. Great publication, great people, proud to be part of them. Also, I write for The Social Contract. I've been doing interviews for some of the news media of late. Been doing a lot of TV, not the mainstream media. God forbid they should have a former agent on of the INS to discuss immigration. Who else would you have on? You know, when the issue is the military, they bring in former generals and commandos and Navy SEALs. If they're going to discuss something about flight, they'll bring in astronauts and test pilots and airline pilots. If it's a report about a murder, they'll bring in a retired homicide detective. When the topic is immigration, you bring in pollsters, pundits, and political consultants. We heard what Donald Trump had to say about political consultants today. I have to tell you, he gave me a good laugh, but he was spot on. But the mainstream media doesn't want to have the truth out there. It is fake news, propaganda. It's outrageous. It's outrageous. But I will tell you that I have been on, in fact, today I taped an interview with an old friend, Bill Tucker. Bill used to work for Lou Dobbs when he was over at CNN, and now he is with Newsmax. I do quite a few interviews with Newsmax for the Steve Malzberg show, for Newsmax News Prime, hosted by J.D. Hayworth, former member of Congress, Republican from Arizona. In fact, J.D. was in attendance at the hearing where I testified about 6 weeks after 9/11, without authority, I might add, I testified on the ways that the failures of the immigration system undermined our national security and made those terrorist attacks possible. So J.D. Hayworth, Steve Malzberg, Bill Tucker over at Newsmax, great organization, happy to do their programs. I've been doing programs on One American News Network with Graham Ledger. A great guy, wonderful program. I was on with him. It was either yesterday or the day before yesterday. The days kind of get smushed together as the calendar gallops along. Also, I was on Dana Loesch's great program on the Blaze TV. And what's interesting about these programs, you should know, there's no pre-interviews. The other networks, before you come on, they call you up. They say, oh, Mr. Cutler, we're doing a story about the president. What do you think? And if what you think doesn't march lockstep with what they want you to put out there, somehow they say to you, you know, we may be going in a different direction this evening. Different direction. That's called censorship. That's called censorship. And in fact, I've asked the producers at Newsmax, at One American News Network, and at the Dana Show, how come you guys don't pre-interview me? You have no idea what I'm likely to say. And they said, well, we think we know what you're going to say, Mr. Cutler. But you know what? You're an expert. You've been before all those congressional hearings. You've testified before a bunch of trials. You gave testimony to 9/11. You did the job for 30 years. You're an expert without any question. And as an expert, you're entitled to your opinion. And we're journalists. And it's our obligation to provide your opinions as an expert to our viewers. Heard that from producers from all three programs. I almost fell out of my chair the first time. The second time, I said, wow, that's pretty cool. The third time, I said, well, we've got a bunch of folks who are real journalists. So put in a plug, and I don't get paid for the plug, and I don't get paid to be on their programs, but I'm proud to be on their programs because they do not have a problem with the truth. They do not have a problem with presenting viewpoints of experts. My gosh, they might actually give journalists a good name. So a little salute, Dana Loesch at The Blaze, Graham Ledger over at the One American News Network, the Daily Ledger is his program, and Steve Malzberg, J.D. Hayworth, Bill Tucker, all over at Newsmax. Always happy to do the programs for them, hope to do many more, and sort out where we are going with immigration. Because finally, we have a president in the Oval Office who not only gets it, but is acting accordingly. And so that's the point that I want to make before I talk about this article that I just wrote for Front Page Magazine. And that article was Trump's immigration executive orders and the Constitution. I took a hard look at the accusations and the lies that have been thrown about with reckless abandon by the open borders immigration anarchists. But, you know, the issue that we really need to consider is that if you remember, when Barack Obama occupied the Oval Office, the Republicans were saying, well, first we're going to secure the border, and then, and I kept saying, well, wait a minute, folks. You have to do all of the enforcement programs simultaneously. In fact, I wrote an article, I think it was for capsweb.org, I'd have to go back and check, but I referred to something as COMPILE, C-O-M-P-I-L-E, and it was an acronym for Comprehensive Immigration Law Enforcement, not reform, Comprehensive Immigration Law Enforcement, and I called it COMPILE. Now, that's exactly what Donald Trump is doing. He wants to hire 10,000 ICE agents. We have 5,000 now, half are doing customs work. I hope we get our priorities straight and make certain that the bulk of these resources will go to immigration law enforcement, immigration investigations, but he wants 15,000 ICE agents. He wants to bring on board another 5,000 Border Patrol agents. And he's done something else that's really fascinating. And this is something that has got to lift the burdens of the ICE agents right off their shoulders. Under Barack Obama, many aliens who were here illegally were declared to be off limit. This guy is protected. That guy is protected. You can't arrest this one. You can't arrest that one. And Donald Trump comes along and he issues an executive order. And what he said in that executive order, let me just pull this up. Bear with me for one moment. What he said in that executive order, I don't have it in front of me, so I'll paraphrase it. But essentially what he said was there is no category of illegal alien that is off limits to the immigration agents. And that was what I said when I worked with Senator Al D'Amato, and he was New York senior senator, when we put together what was called the aggravated felon reentry law to make unlawful reentry a 20-year maximum felony when an alien with a criminal history gets deported and reenters the United States illegally. And I said to the senator, I said, Senator, listen, I think we should focus on criminal aliens. Law enforcement is a triage. You go after the most serious problem before you do anything else. You know, in a car accident, you go after the guy with the head injury before you go after the guy with the sprained ankle. You got limited resources, prioritize. Go after the most serious offenders first. But don't ignore people who are simply illegally present in the United States for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you don't arrest illegal aliens who run the border, you have now told terrorists and fugitives how to embed themselves. Run the border. Make certain you don't jaywalk, don't spit on the sidewalk, don't disagree with anybody. Make certain that no one pays attention to you and nobody will look to arrest and deport you. That's dangerous because we know that that was part of the embedding tactic of the 9/11 terrorists. You know, and we hear these people say it all the time. Well, they're going to check the terror watch list. Check the terror watch list. We're going to check criminal records. Here's the problem. Quite a few terrorists in this country showed up on no terror watch list till after the attacks. I jokingly said on a radio show earlier this week that perhaps St. Peter and Santa Claus both have truly all-encompassing comprehensive lists. Who's good, who's bad, who's evil, who's ugly. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly. We don't. We don't. And in fact, somebody once described an effective spy as somebody who would not attract the attention of the waiter or waitress at the Greasy Spoon Diner. Point of fact, it might even be that that spy is that waiter or waitress. And you could say the same thing about terrorists. The goal of the terrorist is to blend into a community, smile at the people that he passes on the street, while he or she goes about the deadly preparations to kill as many people as possible. Think what happened in San Bernardino with those two pieces of trash that killed all those people. They're going to a Christmas party with their workers, and then they kill them. Didn't show up on any terror watch list. So you've got to make randomness, which is a legitimate component to law enforcement, a legitimate component of what we do with immigration. And that's why when you hear sanctuary city mayors and sanctuary city police chiefs say, oh, we're not going to help ICE. If that guy didn't commit a murder, if he didn't chop someone's head off, if he didn't rape a 12-year-old girl, we're not going to let immigration know about him. Well, I want to know what they're going to say when one of those sanctuary mayors or sanctuary chiefs of police have, God forbid, a terrorist attack and they've got a bunch of dead bodies. And then it turns out that maybe the guy that does this or the gal that does this had interacted with the police and the police ignored them and didn't tell ICE because they weren't stopped for a serious enough violation of law. Our immigration laws in and of themselves are serious. And I have an article that I'm just going to, you know, give you a little hint about where it's going. I hope that it's published this coming week. Passing. Aliens who enter are trespassing if they're not inspected. And you have members of Congress, and one in particular, and I hope you like the article, presuming it's published, a big loudmouth on giving citizenship to illegal aliens, but who insists that people who trespass should go to jail for 5 years. The hypocrisy, mind-boggling. So we've got to go out and arrest illegal aliens. Focus on the bad guys, but when you encounter what I call collateral arrests, as an agent, I found them all the time. If you're looking for a guy who's truly bad, the guy has 5 convictions for armed robbery and drug trafficking and rape and assault with a weapon, and you're looking for, this guy is going to move every 3 or 4 months because he knows if he stays in one place too long, people will figure out where he is and he will wind up getting arrested. So they hopscotch all over the place. Trust me, I've tracked down enough of these fugitives. But what happens when you knock on a door and the guy you're looking for isn't there, but some poor guy who took the day off because he wanted to go to a ball game or he has a miserable cold, but he's here illegally, and you knock on the door, and he opens the door, and you say, hey, I'm looking for John Smith. He's a citizen of Great Britain, and he's wanted for raping a child and so forth. Do you know him? Oh, yeah, I get mail for him all the time. I moved in a month and a half ago, but I'm still getting his mail. Oh, and by the way, who are you? Oh, me? I'm, Pedro from Spain. Well, Pedro from Spain, can I see your passport? And it turns out Pedro from Spain is an illegal alien. You know what? He's getting arrested. And not because he's from Spain. I don't care if he was from Israel. I probably arrested more illegal Israelis than anybody because I had tripped over a terror plot and Israel is a new agent. So whenever they had fugitives, I arrest a guy, for example, wanted for murder. He murdered a Palestinian alleged prostitute in Israel, fled to the United States, and we sent him home to stand trial, and he was convicted. So it's not about race, not about religion, not about ethnicity. It's about getting people off the street who violated our immigration laws that are our first and last line of defense against criminals, against spies, against terrorists. This is about protecting our country. And very often, it's also about providing closure for people in other countries when we have fugitives here who've committed terrible crimes and flee to the United States to avoid the long arm of the law in their home countries. So understand that this is not an evil thing to arrest some bad guy. Oh, my God, don't you have compassion? We hear this all the time. Don't you have compassion? I do. I have compassion for the people who were killed and raped and robbed and beaten. I have compassion for people who were swindled out of money by people perpetrating scams and mail fraud in the United States. I have compassion for people who get hooked on drugs, whose kids get attacked by gang members in school when the gang members shouldn't be here. And by the way, it's usually the members of the ethnic immigrant communities who are most at risk from these international pieces of trash or transnational criminals. And it's not just Latin America. We've got to stop thinking just in terms of one part in the world because, folks, this may be a shock to you, but human nature is human nature. Every human being bleeds red, right? And every race, every religion, every ethnicity has what I call the good, the bad, and the ugly. I've arrested members of the Russian mob. I've arrested members of the Jamaican drug posses, Israeli organized crime, Italian organized crime, criminals from Canada, criminals from Mexico, criminals from Colombia, from Africa, from Japan. I got an award from the government of Japan for helping them locate and apprehend a woman who was part of a cocaine smuggling organization. Because human nature is human nature. Scratch beneath the skin, which is very superficial, and you find human beings. And human beings are human beings. So this isn't about racism. And I want to make one other quick point. I remember, to my anger, I noticed the Anti-Defamation League put up on their website some article about me. Now, I was a B'nai B'rith president back in college. The Anti-Defamation League is a part of the B'nai B'rith. They referred to me as being anti-immigrant. And that's where we are today. If you're pro-enforcement, you're anti-immigrant. For the first 4 years of my career, I was an immigration inspector. I admitted thousands of aliens into the United States, thousands of tourists, thousands of foreign students, exchange visitors, foreign workers authorized to work in the United States. Loved doing it. Made me happy. I admitted refugees. As long as they were vetted, everything was not happy to do it. When I was an adjudications officer for a year, I did the marriage interviews. And yes, I did come up with a marriage fraud ring, and we did uncover quite a bit of fraud. But I also approved thousands of applications, gave people green cards. I had the authority as an adjudicator to put that approval stamp on their paperwork, and they got their residency. Happy to do it. What I was happy to do was to enforce the law. Enforce the law. And the immigration laws are balanced and they are eminently fair, I promise you. It's just all about the lies. All about the lies. And you know, it gets old after a while. It really does. And the American people have lost sight of what really is at stake. And when you had Jimmy Carter start this nonsense of not referring to illegal aliens as illegal aliens, but calling them immigrants, And now the media is out there, and they're saying Donald Trump is going to have ICE round up the immigrants. Round up the immigrants. That's insanity. My wife works at a synagogue, and one of the people that works with her came to her today and said, you know, my husband loves Donald Trump. He's an American, but I have a green card. Do you think that immigration is going to come and arrest me? And my wife said, that's ridiculous. You have a green card. Why would they arrest you? Well, all over the news, they keep saying the same thing. Donald Trump wants to round up the immigrants. I spoke with a young lady who's a reporter originally from Great Britain. And she said to me today, I feel confident that everything is okay. But she says, you know, I came here on a journalist's visa, met my husband, got married. I have a green card. But she says, you know, and Charlotte, if you're listening, it was an interesting conversation, and it disturbed me. Because she said, you know, it just made me a little bit unsettled when they start saying that they're going to round up the immigrants. So let me provide some clarity to the lunacy foisted on us by Jimmy Carter and all the fools that have followed in his footsteps. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. Nobody is going to look to arrest someone with a green card unless they've been found guilty of committing felonies, okay? This isn't about going after the immigrants. It's about going after illegal aliens. But if you want to talk about creating a climate of fear, and Nancy Pelosi went to Mexico shortly after 9/11 and accused immigration agents of creating a climate of fear, I can't begin to tell you my rage with that woman. I have absolutely no use for her, and I'd love to know how she keeps getting reelected with all the nonsense she's foisted on us. To go to Mexico City and refer to immigration agents as being terrorists to the immigrant communities. Those ashes landed on my home, Miss Pelosi, wherever you are. And to equate immigration agents with terrorists, I did a debate where some mayor from New Jersey equated immigration agents with the Gestapo. I was named for my grandmother who was slaughtered in Poland because we're Jewish. How do you think that plays? Immigration agents are not unlike the FBI or DEA or ATF or the cop on the beat. We enforce the laws as the Congress wrote them, and those laws were enacted to protect our lives and protect the jobs of Americans and protect national security and public health. And that's a terrible thing to do. It's terrible to get rid of criminals who rape little girls. It's terrible to get rid of criminals who sell narcotics to our children. That's how twisted Donald Trump's opponents are and how twisted the media is when they can report on this garbage. There was an article in the New York Times that I called up the reporter, but of course she didn't return my phone call because her article was all about how, because of Donald Trump's crackdown, he is handcuffing, her words, handcuffing the police and going after gang members on Long Island here in New York. Handcuffing? Do you know how many gang members I've arrested? In other words, let's not arrest the gang members and then everything will be fine. Let's not arrest anybody. And here's the lie, and you've heard it, and you're going to hear it again and again and again from those losers, and I hope they are losers come the next election day, the mayors of the sanctuary cities. If we enforce the immigration laws, victims of crime won't come forward. I know you're shaking your heads up and down. The seismographs are moving. There's something known as a U visa. When somebody is the victim of a violent crime, they can go to an immigration officer, and with the police, they can get a visa to stay here if they cooperate with the police and provide help and evidence so that the bad guy gets caught. Now, if you're hiding in a sanctuary city, you're not immune to being arrested by immigration. You know, be in the wrong place at the wrong time, you could get arrested. If we give you a U visa, the problem is permanently and forever solved. But then the politicians won't be able to manipulate vulnerable people, which is what these open borders advocates want. It's like wanting to have indentured servants. They want that population of vulnerable illegal aliens so they can manipulate the news reports about what we're doing with them. This is as disgusting and despicable as it gets. And when people run the border, yes, they may just be coming here looking for a job, but they may have committed a crime. They might be fugitives from justice. They might be here because they're gang members looking to expand their turf. They might be terrorists waiting for that tap on the shoulder or the phone call telling them that tomorrow is the day. The problem is when people sneak into the country, we don't know that they're here. There's no record of their entry. We don't know who they are, when they got here, or why they're here. And this creates a problem. We admit more than a million lawful immigrants every year. We admit tens of millions of temporary visitors, non-immigrant aliens every year. We naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens every year. But if you listen to the open borders anarchists, we don't let anybody in. We never give anybody citizenship. More aliens lawful status as immigrants than the rest of the world combined. Think about that. And then we get to the basis for my article. I want to talk a little bit about this. And please pay attention because this is so important. I debated an attorney last week on a radio show. And it was kind of fun. She fancied herself a litigator. Not a lawyer, but she's a litigator. 10 years as a litigator. And I'm thinking, wow, my cousin Vinny, for those of you, if you get a chance, if you haven't seen it, go see the movie, Hysterical, My Cousin Vinny, litigator. And the first thing she said as we were starting the debate, this has to be about fact. You never attack anybody. It's always about fact and law and so forth. I said, fine, I'm with you. I'm with you. I've been doing debating since I was 14 years old back in high school. I'm with you. I'm all for an honest debate. Let's do it. And the first thing she said is, what the president is doing, what Donald Trump is doing, is unconstitutional. And I joke about this, but you know, Jews answer a question with another question, so I'm predisposed to ask the question in the first place. And I said, okay, what section of the Constitution is the president violating? And she was stumped. She says, well, you know, it sounds like he's trying to ban a religion. I said, okay. Is there anything in his executive order that says we won't allow a particular religion into the country, people who subscribe to a particular religion? No, but he made statements. I said, that's not the point. The statements that he may have made on the campaign trail may have been over the top. Maybe they weren't over the top. And by the way, I would argue, and you'll see why, that it might even be that a president can bar people who believe in a particular religion from the United States. I personally would not like to see that. I do believe in religious freedom. But something dawned on me, and I was speaking to a friend of mine who lost his son to an illegal alien. The guy ran his son over three times, trying to flee after a motor vehicle accident. No license. And my friend Don Rosenberg, I wish I didn't know him because I know him because of this tragedy that befell his family and his 25-year-old son who was in law school at the time. But I said, you know, we give political asylum to women who come to America claiming that if they stayed in their home country, they would face genital mutilation. And in the name of religious freedom, we are admitting people into the country who likely would practice genital mutilation. Does this make sense to anybody? You know, you just have to wonder about the sanity of what we do and what we say. But again, I understand religious freedom. And as someone who's Jewish, as someone whose family was decimated in the Holocaust, religious freedom is very, very, very important to me, perhaps in ways that it might not be to other people, not to knock anybody else. But my mother came here as a 14-year-old girl, lived by herself in a rooming factory, and to her dying day had nightmares where she would cry in her sleep and I would have to wake her up. And I remember doing this for her when I was a young boy, because she was so traumatized by having to say goodbye to her mother at the train station as a 14-year-old girl, never saw her again. My first wife died of cancer almost 31 years ago. Her mother was in a concentration camp. Her father was on the run, hiding in the forests of Poland, and his family was wiped out. His brother was shot to death by the Nazi bastards. So I truly understand why religious freedom is so important. why religious persecution is so heinous. But in the name of religion, we've got to be careful that people don't commit heinous acts. And that's when we start talking about people who are radical Islamists, using religion as justification for terrible crimes, murder, terror attacks, all sorts of insanity. But there was nothing in the executive order that Donald Trump issued that singled out a religion. And the seven countries on that list was a list compiled by the prior administration, the Obama administration, because of the nexus those countries have with terrorism. And because we can't vet the people coming out of those countries. And I said to this woman in the debate, I said, you know, if President Trump is really trying to bar Muslims from entering the United States, he's doing a terrible job. He should have put Indonesia on that list because by itself, Indonesia has nearly as many citizens as do all of those seven countries combined. But Indonesia is not on the list. Saudi Arabia, not on the list. Pakistan, not on the list. Do you really think he's trying to bar Muslims from entering the United States? She had no answer. And then she said, and this is the woman who said, no attacks, please, no attacks. We're going to be on fact only. The reason Trump doesn't put Saudi Arabia on that list or those other countries, he has business interests there, and that's why he's allowing them in. I said, that's a pretty serious charge. And the radio talk show host got pretty worked up. He said, wait a minute. You can't throw around accusations. What's your evidence? Well, there have been articles written. Articles written. This is a litigator. Would that article that was written qualify as admissible evidence in a court of law? I highly doubt it. So the woman who started out saying no attacks launched into an attack on the President of the United States with unsubstantiated and frankly disgusting and crazy assertions and allegations. No attacks. So I would say this. I believe that the president, because of the Constitution, not only is protected from what he did, but is compelled to take the actions that he's taking. So listen to this. U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution states, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. And on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. Now, let's think about that. Invasion has been defined as an instance of invading a country or region with an armed force. Well, I would argue that in this day and age of asymmetrical warfare, terrorists are an armed force, not representing a country, but representing an ideology, radical Islam. Okay? Additionally, an incursion by a large number of people or things into a place or sphere of activity. Finally, an unwelcome intrusion to another's domain. These are all definitions and examples of invasion. Now, I would argue that since the president, as commander-in-chief, is responsible for protecting the states against invasion and against domestic violence, failure to act would be dereliction of duty and abrogation of his responsibilities. There is no way that a president of the United States can watch what happened, San Bernardino, the Boston attack, 9/11, the failed, thankfully, attack at the Times Square bomb of Faisal Shahzad. We have a list of these. And so the president is acting responsibly. How is he acting? To try to keep terrorists out of the country if we can't screen them. Period. And that's what the 9/11 Commission said we need to do, by the way. In fact, the 9/11 Commission was so crystal clear on this, if I can find this for you, hopefully I can. This is the preface of the 9/11 Commission's staff report on terrorist travel. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. In fact, today at CPAC, if you saw it, that was almost word for word what the president said when he was talking about why he was taking the actions on immigration that he is taking. And that preface goes on to say, prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Now we go to page 61 of that 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And the title of page 61 of this paragraph, Exploring the Link Between Human Smugglers and Terrorists. Again, we're talking immigration, aren't we? In July 2001, the CIA warned of a possible link between human smugglers and terrorist groups, including Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Egyptian Islamic Jihad. Indeed, there is evidence to suggest that since 1999, human smugglers have facilitated the travel of terrorists associated with more than a dozen extremist groups. With their global reach and connection to fraudulent document vendors and corrupt government officials, human smugglers clearly have had the credentials necessary to aid terrorist travel. How clear is that? Now, as for the actual executive order, I want you to consider this section of law. And I've spoken about this section of the immigration law before, but not this subsection. So let me read this to you. And by the way, if you go to Front Page Magazine, this material is there. Go to michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org or The Social Contract. All of my articles, if you go through them, I provide you with all of this information. And it's critical. And I ask you, please, if you like the articles that I write, forward them to your friends. Post the links on Facebook and other social media. We have got to educate American people to understand that we finally have someone in the Oval Office who gives a rat's tail about the average American, not the corporations. You see, we are so fortunate that Hillary did not win. She wanted to provide amnesty to every single illegal alien in this country. You would have people flocking to America, lying about when they got here. You could have wound up with 40 or 50 million. Look, Ronald Reagan, his amnesty was a disaster, and that should have been the lesson. He claimed that a million aliens would come out of those shadows. We keep hearing about the damn shadows. We wound up with almost 4 million. Now they're telling us 11 million. What's 4 times 11? Okay? 40 million. And then they would immediately have total, absolute, unchallengeable right to bring in their spouses and every single one of their minor children. How in the world would our educational system cope with an influx of 20 or 30 million children that would go to school literally overnight? We have schools now that can't cope with the student population, where teachers are dipping into their own wallets to buy supplies for their children because the school districts are broke. What could possibly go wrong if we added tens of millions of children to our school system overnight through a massive amnesty program? So it's important that people understand, and again, I'm not, you know, a spokesperson for Donald Trump, but I am a spokesperson for my own four children and my unbelievable granddaughter and for all of my friends and neighbors, all of my fellow Americans. That's why I've been doing this program ever since just a couple of years after 9/11. I started doing radio and been doing TV and writing articles and testimony before Congress and state legislative bodies. I've been desperate to get the word out. Got to be some honesty to the conversation. And the lies are deafening and they're damaging. And it's got to stop. And the antidote to the lies is the truth. The truth. The truth is so damn important and increasingly so difficult to come by. But if you want to talk about the authority that the president had to act, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, Inadmissible Aliens, and I've spoken about this frequently, to make the point that our immigration laws are not racist. There's nothing in those laws about race, religion, or ethnicity. If there was, I never could have taken the job, okay? It's about keeping out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Think of Ellis Island. It was a quarantine station run by public health in conjunction with immigration. Aliens who are mentally ill, same deal. You don't want people who are crazy who might go out and hurt people. Aliens who are criminals and spies and terrorists and human rights violators and fugitives from justice. Prior deportees. And then we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge, or aliens who, if they worked, would be displacing Americans, either costing Americans their jobs or, at the very least, driving down wages by flooding the labor pool. That's what the laws are about. But Section F of United States Code, Section 1182, is entitled Suspension of entry or imposition of restrictions by president. By president. Now, when I read this to you, I want you to notice that this, and it's short, it's four lines, but I want you to notice that it talks about the president's authority. It doesn't say in consultation with anybody else. The president by himself is authorized to take the actions that I'm about to describe to you. I didn't write this. This is part of the Immigration and Nationality Act that was enacted, by the way, in 1952, the initial body of law. There's been modifications, there's been amendments to it and so forth, but the essential body of law was the McCarran-Walter Act of 1952, the Immigration and Nationality Act, 1952. This isn't brand new. Nobody cooked this up overnight. And in fact, in 1980, Jimmy Carter used that section of law to block the entry of all Iranians into the United States after our embassy was overrun. This isn't about Donald Trump. You know, we've got to stop the lies. It just doesn't seem to ever end. And here's the quote from that law. Whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, and I'm just going to stop for a moment. Think about the bar we're setting here, the standard. It doesn't say alien with an atom bomb, alien with you know, viral diseases that he wants to kill people. No, simply any alien or class of aliens would be detrimental to the interests of the United States. That is as broad a term as you could possibly imagine, detrimental to the interests. What constitutes detrimental? The president, and the president alone, can make that determination. Think about it. Let me go back from the beginning, and I'll read it all the way through. But I wanted to make certain that you understand the broad authority on immigration that the president has, because aliens do not have an inherent right to enter the United States. Only American citizens have an absolute right to enter. Aliens don't. Let me go back and read this. Whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he, that is to say the president, may by proclamation, or perhaps executive order, and for such period as he shall deem necessary, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions that he may deem to be appropriate. We are in the middle of a war on terror. Time and time and time and time again, we've had deadly terrorist attacks carried out in the United States. We've seen terrorist attacks carried out in other countries. People dying, slaughtered, horrifically, terribly, suffering. The president is acting, in my judgment, very responsibly, and accepting the authority, but also the responsibility that is bestowed upon him by the Constitution and by our immigration laws. There is nothing inappropriate, in my judgment, that the president did. You know, I just find it remarkable that the American people seem to have a problem with a president who keeps his promises and puts the American people ahead of all others. He has not only talked about bringing jobs back to America, ladies and gentlemen, but about making certain that American hands do those jobs. I don't care what political party affiliation you have or don't have. I don't care if you're affiliated with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. When was the last time you heard of a president or a governor or a mayor from any party stand there and say, not only are we going to bring jobs back, but we're going to make damn sure that Americans do those jobs. We're going to make certain to protect America from criminals who have no right to be here. And people are demonstrating. Talk about the Stockholm Syndrome, and forgive that reference with all that's been said about Sweden recently. We have a president, in my judgment, who has been acting responsibly, reasonably, and appropriately, given the situation we find ourselves in today. We really need to support him in his efforts. And again, I ask that if you become aware of opportunities, if you know of any speaking opportunities, I'm going out there doing events, panel discussions, debates. We've got to have these conversations, and we've got to inform as many of our fellow Americans as possible. And please forward my emails, forward the link to the podcast of this program. And again, please check out michaelcutler.net, frontpagemag.com, capsweb.org, the social contract. And please, folks, I always like to make the same point. Please get involved, because democracy is not a spectator sport. I have you all. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend coming up. Hope the weather is good wherever you are. And I look forward to seeing you again, same time next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody. See you next week.